Dead On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we are, a minute after the hour of 6 p.m. on the East Coast. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On for a Thursday night. Great to have you on hand. Great to have you along. Great to be part of the renewal of the American dialogue, the American debate, the American discussion. And we begin this evening with a little bit of, current sort of news. If you haven't seen it already, it's news to you. It was news to me just a couple of minutes ago. I am not proud to make this announcement. It grieves me to make this announcement. Dennis Kucinich is abandoning his presidential bid. Now, the last time he ran in 2004, he stayed in the fight all the way to the bitter end so that they at least had to pay attention to the issues that mattered most to him during the Democratic National Convention. Not this time. No, this time he has been ignored. He has been derided. He has been castigated even by those on his own side. He has faced family tragedy and the death of his brother. And he is facing, I think, four other challengers for the Democratic primary nomination in his district in Ohio. So by November, by whenever Ohio has its primary, we may not only not have Dennis Kucinich to vote for president, but there may not be Dennis Kucinich in the United States Congress come January of 2009. And I find that disheartening. One of the very few people that I thought were worth looking up to in the Congress is Dennis Kucinich. I wish he was my congressman. He is apparently angered some portion of his party for actually coming out and saying the things that need to be said, and he does indeed have four challengers in the Democratic congressional primary March 4th. Among others is a guy, a character by the name of Joe Kimperman, who says that Dennis has spent too much time outside of his district with his presidential campaign. On the upside, on what I think is an indication of Dennis's continuing moral rectitude, he says he will not endorse another Democrat in the primary. You know, this makes me sick. He's brought issue after issue after issue to the table that no one else was talking about, only to see them co-opted and watered down by his opponents. And he couldn't at any point get any press coverage whatsoever. He was ignored. He was less than ignored. He was disdained. But now, he's on the front page at MSN.com. Headline from MSNBC, Kucinich abandons White House bid. And you get this piece of journalism, so to speak. Kucinich brought the same sense of idealism to his second run for president as he did in his first bid. He said he was entering the race again because the Democratic Party wasn't pushing hard enough to end the Iraq War. Well, gee, thanks. Thanks, MSNBC. Thanks, Associated Press. Day late and a dollar short. As per usual. The new, the announcement of the bowing out of the race will come tomorrow, Friday. Another paragraph from the Johnny on the Spot journalists at the Associated Press. Kucinich has received little support in his presidential bid. He got 1% of the vote in the New Hampshire primary and was shut out in the Iowa caucuses, although he has a devoted following. Yeah, he's got a devoted following. The devoted following is millions strong, but, you know, the mainstream media wouldn't allow those people to even so much as be seen on camera. The only place in America you could go and hear the positive about the positive message of Dennis Kucinich was here on the Horn, or perhaps, our good friend Mike Malloy. Time after time after time, Tom Hartman would ask his listeners to call in and tell who they were supporting, and it was routinely almost unanimous for Kucinich. MSNBC ran polls that Kucinich came out on top of, and then they had to go back and take the poll down and put it back up with all fresh zeros, and Kucinich won that one too. They took it back down as quickly as it showed up. I will tell you that it is disheartening to me. And yeah, sure, some things happened in this campaign that I found less than to my satisfaction, but they were issues that had to do more with his own sense of personal integrity. When Shirley MacLaine opened her fat gob and said, I was hanging out with him by the roses when he saw a UFO. Thanks, Shirley. We needed the UFO vote, by God. We sure needed that. Thanks. Thanks a million. Stop helping so much, okay, Shirley? Which then led Democrats themselves to disdain Dennis Kucinich and turn away from his message. But that's okay, because along the way, some of the things that Dennis was talking about 4 years ago have finally found their way onto the radar of the mainstream candidates. In 2004, Dennis was talking about health care more loudly than any other candidate. In 2004, Dennis was talking about Iraq more stridently, stringently, than any other candidate. NAFTA? Well, there's at least one candidate that won't be talking about NAFTA. Possibly two on the Democratic side. But he certainly did shaped the beginning of the discussion. He just wasn't allowed to participate in it beyond being asked questions about a UFO or his wife's tongue stud. Thank you, Fourth Estate. Thank you, Guardians of the First Amendment. Thank you, mainstream media. Don't call us, and we won't call you. Gotta hate him. From the Associated Press to ABC News, CBS News, NBC News, to the New York Times, to the Washington Post, to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, to the Dallas Morning News, to the Kansas City Star, I hate him. At least they're so-called political writers. Because they have cheapened and made sick and tawdry process that should be almost sacred in a nation that prides itself on its democratic process. See you, Dennis. I hope that you'll at least keep talking about issues. I won't say that I'm not sad, because I am sad. Next up, now that Dennis is out of the way, the mainstream media can finally train its crosshairs on John Edwards and get back to talking about his hair and get back to talking about what matters not. You're getting a horse race, America. Prefabricated for your convenience. Just add hot politics. What? You don't like it? You have to like it. It's what we've given you. How dare you say you don't like the prefabricated election campaign season that the mainstream media has so lovingly and painstakingly prepared for you so that you would not have to think. So that your only choice would be black skin or white skin or vagina versus penis. How dare you? We've made it easy for you. And you complain? What? You want to talk about issues? You want to talk about health care? You want to talk about why the country's going broke in Iraq? You want to talk about that stuff? Sit down, shut up, and turn on American Idol. We'll tell you what you want to think about. Foul with you, American electorate. It's not your job to think. When we want you to think, we'll give you a choice between tastes great and less filling, and you can damned well like it. Uh-oh, I didn't mean to start like that. I really didn't. But that's okay, it's past, and we'll just have to deal with it. Oh, wait. Oh. Headline, Bush hails tax rebate deal as robust. It's robust. It's a robusto. Not an arbusto, but a robusto. It's a robust stimulus package that has come along as a function of the bilateral negotiations between the Congress and the White House. Nah, it's a rubber check and it's a dodge.
Agreement with Speaker Pelosi and Minority Leader Boehner on an economic growth package. Mr. Secretary, thank you for handling the negotiations and appreciate your hard work. This agreement was the result of intensive discussions and many phone calls, late-night meetings.
Oh, well, if there were phone calls, I guess it's okay.
And the kind of cooperation that some predicted was not possible here in Washington. It also required patience, determination, and goodwill. I thank the Speaker.
Oh, I'm so glad to know the Democratic majority has goodwill toward a guy who slapped him around like a cheap, like some sort of... Yeah, that's refreshing. I'm glad to know the Democrats have goodwill. Peace on earth, goodwill for all, and Christmas is over. When are you going to fight?
And I thank Leader Boehner for their hard work and for their leadership and for showing the American people that we can come together to help our nation deal with difficult economic challenges.
By writing a bad check.
I'm pleased that this agreement meets the criterion that I set forth last week to provide an effective, robust, and temporary set of incentives.
Oh, what's the word of the day? It must be robust.
That will boost our economy and encourage job creation. This package has the right set of policies and is the right size. The incentives in this package will...
Something like $145 billion, but we couldn't find $35 billion over five freaking years to make sure that children could go to the damn doctor when they're sick.
Lead to higher consumer spending and increased business investment this year. Importantly, this package recognizes that lowering taxes is a powerful and efficient way to help consumers and businesses.
Another tax dodge. Oh. Go ahead. You know, I think I will. Just go ahead and put your finger down your throat and puke now.
We need tax cuts is a great way of growing the economy. When the economy's not growing, or when it is growing, it's a great way to keep it from growing. Tax cuts is a lot like mayonnaise. It's good on everything.
I've always believed that allowing people to keep more of their own money and to use it as they see fit is the best way to help our economy grow.
There's only one problem. It doesn't do that. But we'll talk about that in a minute.
I'm also pleased that this agreement does not include any tax increases, as well as unnecessary spending projects that would have...
Unnecessary spending projects, like letting sick children, you know, go to the doctor.
Little immediate impact on our economy. I know Americans are concerned about our economic future.
Mainly because of all the hot checks you've written, George.
Our economy is structurally sound, but it is...
If you consider building houses out of cards structurally sound, very sound. If you consider building your house on shifting sands sound, you couldn't get any sounder than what we are, by golly.
Dealing with short-term disruptions in the housing market and the impact of higher energy prices.
Short-term disruptions in the housing market. That means that it'll only be at any time now. Just any time now, we'll find some more American farmland that could be growing, you know, food to build some stinking McMansions on. Any time now.
These challenges are slowing growth. Yet Americans can also be confident about our long-term outlook. Our economy is strong, it is dynamic, and it is resilient.
Strong, dynamic, and resilient? What is he talking about, an economy or a floor wax?
It has led the world for many decades. And with the right policies...
It has led the world for many decades. Now it's leading the world down the toilet. Again. Yay us. Ooh, who wants to sing? And I'm proud to be an American.
...in place, including the extension of the tax cuts passed in 2001 and 2003 that have helped our economy. I firmly believe we're going to continue to lead the world. Because the country needs this boost to the economy now, I urge the House and the Senate to enact this economic growth agreement into law as soon as possible. We have an opportunity to come together and take the swift, decisive action our economy urgently needs. Secretary Paulson is here to answer any of your questions. At my request, he has taken the lead negotiations, like I mentioned, and you did a...
Yeah, well, you did a great job. Thanks for your bold service to America, Hank Paulson. There, you daggum moron! Can't believe it. Just astonishing. What is wrong with my music collection? I get down to the point where I need to... Bush says Come Together, and I need to play the Beatles doing Come Together, and I don't have Come Together. Oh, my God. Now, details on this tale told by an idiot full of sound and fury and signifying nothing. Nancy Pelosi is all a titter about her... coming together with George Bush and John Boehner. She says it's that Congress will act on the agreement at the earliest date so that those rebate checks can be in the mail. Rebate checks. You're not going to get to keep it. You know that, right? It's a payday loan. It's going to come back and bite you. The rebates will go out to about 116 million American families. Pelosi's staff notes that the rebates will include $28 billion in checks to 35 million working families who wouldn't have been helped by Bush's original proposal. Good for her. Okay, good for the Democrats. They got us a bone. Hey, a bone got thrown to us. Or some of us. Let's see. Individuals who pay income taxes will get up to $600, working couples $1,200, and those with children an additional $300 per child under the agreement. And workers who make at least $3,000 but don't pay taxes would get $300 rebates. Hmm. Anything in there about people who are on Social Security? Anything in there about people who are on SSI? Anything in there about people who have been disabled via workers' via work-related injuries and are collecting workers' compensation? No, I didn't see anything about the people in there. Apparently, they can't stimulate the economy by spending money. The first rebate payments are expected to start going out in May. Start shopping now so you can have a nice little list. For your $300. Again, with the $300, you'll note. Meanwhile, here's the sweet part of the deal. Businesses will be immediately allowed to write off 50% of purchases of plants and other capital equipment. Hey, let's go buy a plant. Well, you want to get a pepper or a tomato, Bob? No. A steel mill. It will also permit small businesses to write off additional purchases of equipment. Pelosi, Democrat of California, agreed to... Remember what Mark was talking about yesterday? One of the single most effective ways of stimulating the economy is to increase money to poor families to spend on food? Pelosi, D. California, agreed to drop increases in food stamp and unemployment benefits during a Wednesday meeting in exchange for gaining the rebates of at least $300 for almost everyone earning a paycheck, including those who make too little to pay income taxes. Going to give you $300. If you spend it on food, that's your business. If I was you, I'd go hungry and put a down payment on the new Xbox 360 or the PS3 or a couple of games. That's what I'd do. John Boehner, House Minority Leader, came out and said, "You know, many Americans believe that Washington is broken." You know, he's a big one for crying. I'm not sure if he cried today or not, but it would have certainly been called for. Many Americans believe that Washington is broken. But I think this agreement, and I hope that this agreement, will show the American people that we can fix it and will serve as to move along to other bipartisan agreements that we can have in the future. Sure enough. If you go somewhere and you try to borrow money from somebody and the guy says, "Okay, I'll write you a check for what you need, but I need to tell you, the check is hot. The check will bounce." Do you say, "Cool, glad to have the money anyway," and you take the check? What kind of piss poor reasoning is this? I say this rhetorically, and I don't aim it at you guys. Is anybody paying attention? Anybody? You know, anybody? I'm beginning to wonder. Because it is, isn't it? I mean, am I mistaken here? This is a hot check, right? Because we're in a deficit. We don't have real money. So this is sort of funny money, right? This is not real. This is bogus. This is baloney. Sure seems that way to me. Of course, I'm not a highfalutin economist, and I don't pay one on TV, but America, I'm sure, is out there saying, "Oh boy, look at that. Look at all the money we're going to get. And it's free money. We're going to get money for free. We're going to get something for nothing. Hey, look at the free lunch over there. We're going to eat it. Does anybody recognize that this is a ginned up, dummied up, faked up, rubed up con job?
Bueller? 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 Bueller?
Maybe not so much, huh? So we're getting this once. What happens when the economy keeps tanking? You know what I mean? Are they gonna do this again? Now we gave the damn little people enough money already. The reason the economy didn't rebound after this latest round of giveaways was the fact that the tax cuts for the wealthiest 0.1% of Americans was not large enough. How many times do I have to tell you people to just pay attention and we'll get everything figured out? Twenty-six minutes past the hour here at the Horn. 877-443-2366. It's the phone number. I'm Bob Kincaid.
They used to tell me I was building a dream, and so I followed the mob. When there was earth to plow or guns to bear, I was always there, right there on the job. They used to tell me I was building a dream with peace and glory ahead. Why should I be standing in line just waiting for bread? Once I built a railroad, made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once I built a tower to the sun, brick and rivet and line. Once I built a tower, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once in khaki suits, gee, we look swell, full of that Yankee doodly-dum. Half a million boots went slogging through hell. I was the kid with the drum. Say, don't you remember? They called me Al. It was Al all the time. Say, don't you remember? I'm your pal. Buddy, can you spare a dime? Once in khaki suits, gee, we look swell, full of that Yankee diddly dum. Half a million boots went slagging through hell. I was the kid with the drum. Say, don't you remember? They called me Al. It was Al all the time. Say, don't you remember?
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right.
We do?
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at CityNet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit CityNet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Everybody comes to Rick's.
If she can stand it, I can. Play it.
Howdy, Rangers. Tune into Rick's Place. You'll be fascinated with porn psychotherapist Rick Goodner's take on all of today's political issues from a real Texan's liberal point of view. So mosey on into Rick's Place for some good old hospitality with Rick Goodner. See you there, Rangers, this Saturday right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
And if you want another kind of love, I'll wear a mask for you. If you want a partner, open my hand. If you want to strike me down in anger, here I stand. If I'm your man.
Don't miss Rick's Place with Rick Goodner, part of the weekend lineup on The Horn, running all weekend in rotation with The Showers Report and Night Sounds.
I'm stepping to the rain.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black, and if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today may not be around for our children and grandchildren. All the new technology in the world can't create more sky over our heads or new oceans. The Earth's natural resources, fresh water, land, and even the air we breathe are limited. Voluntary family planning improves the health of women and their children. It also helps slow population growth, which is good for our planet. So help ensure that people everywhere have access to the information and services they need to plan their families and help build a healthy future for us all. Population Action International is working to promote voluntary family planning around the world. Visit us at www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
One evening as the sun went down and the jungle fire was burning, down the track came a hobo hiking, and he said, "Boys, I'm not turning. I'm headed for a land that's far away beside the crystal fountains. So come with me, we'll go and see the Big Rock Candy Mountains. In the Big Rock Candy Mountains, there's a land that's fair and bright, where the handouts grow on bushes and you sleep out every night, where the boxcars all are empty and the sun shines every day on the birds and the bees and the cigarette trees, the lemonade springs where the bluebird sings in the Big Rock Candy Mountains. In the Big Rock Candy Mountains, all the cops have wooden legs and the bulldogs all have rubber teeth and the hens lay soft-boiled eggs. The farmer's trees are full of fruit and the barns are full of hay. Oh, I'm bound to go where there ain't no snow, where the rain don't fall, the wind don't blow, in the Big Rock Candy Mountains. In the Big Rock Candy Mountains, you never change your socks, and the little streams of alcohol come a-trickling down the rocks. The brakemen have to tip their hats, and the railroad bulls are blind. There's a lake of stew and a whiskey, too. You can paddle all around them in a big canoe in the Big Rock Candy Mountains. In the Big Rock Candy Mountains, the jails are made of tin, and you can walk right out again as soon as you are in. There ain't no short-handled shovels, no axes, saws, or picks. I'm a-going to stay where you sleep all day, where they hung the Turk that invented work in the Big Rock Candy Mountains.
Yeah, I'm not whistling so good.
I'll see you all this coming fall in the Big Rock Candy Mountain.
Yes, you will. Yes, you sure will. Welcome back. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. You know what? You might want to check into your Depression-era music collection and sort of update it, because, you know, I've got a feeling there's going to be a reason to play that a little bit more. There's more details on this this hot check that's being palmed off on the American people. But let's go to the phones first. Hi, who have I got?
It's me, Michelle.
Hey, Michelle.
Out here in California, couldn't wait to talk to you after I read that. Last night, about 1 o'clock in the morning, I read that thought that Pelosi was going to give in on the welfare and unemployment, go ahead and accept this, this fog over your eye. Don't believe it's a rebate. You're going to have to pay for it later. If not, you grandchildren. It's probably that money anyways that you get, right?
Look, it's funny money. I mean, and this isn't a discussion about the Federal Reserve or anything. It's money we ain't got.
No, you're right. And I was just sitting and watching C-SPAN, just caught it, and it's the Budget Committee, and this, you know, the guy that works on the budget, the head of the Budget Committee, he's like telling us, well, in 2012, I think they're predicting 2010 we'll have a $4.7 trillion deficit if we keep going.
Well, that's and see, the thing is, Michelle, let's make no bones about it. Let's be completely clear. It's the whole Bush tax dodge was set up so that all the chickens come home to roost starting in 2010, 2011, 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And it was designed specifically to keep him in office, pay off his cronies, and then, you know, some poor bastard has to pay as president, has to pay the piper when Bush is off living on his estate in Paraguay or cuddled up with the folks in Dubai or, you know, wherever it is he winds up going.
Well, you know, what really is disturbing to me, and this is what I thought about, you know, the fact is that, like you said, they're robbing Peter's grandchildren, you know, and to pay Paul's bad habit, I guess. But what really disgusts me here is I keep thinking of the vets from Iraq and Afghanistan, and then of course our elder vets, and just the increase in that population, and then I keep thinking of the unemployment, how it, you know, we have so much unemployment, and every year, well, it's not even every year, it's every quarter, you know, the increase is just, it's ridiculous. So here you're cutting two fundamental, you're not getting budgetary increases or allowances for increases in these budgets and these social programs. Fundamental social programs. Welfare is fundamental, as you said, you know, what Mark was saying yesterday about, you know, food is one of the major problems during a recession, and then unemployment benefits are necessary to keep someone up above, not out on the street, you know. So what are we going to see? We're just going to see the lines for the soup kitchens get longer, right?
Well, there's a level of heartless SOB nerve in the business about the unemployment compensation. First of all, you'll hear somebody from the Treasury, Michelle, say, unemployment remains relatively low. Well, that's because they dummied up the numbers.
Right.
Because after you've been unemployed for 6 months, you're not counted as unemployed anymore.
Right, exactly. Even though you didn't.
If the Republicans had their way, they'd just refer to the people who've been unemployed for 6 months as lazy, no good SOBs. But they can't. You know, the image managers won't let them get away quite with that. So they've invented another Orwellian phrase. And after you've been unemployed for 6 months, you go off the unemployment rolls and you're called a discouraged worker.
That's a new one. I didn't.
No, that's not new. It's been going on for a while.
Yeah.
You're discouraged. You know, you'd get up and go to work every day at your job, but you're discouraged. You need a pill.
It reminds me of what was the term of the issues that were bogus. I gave the acronym of CBS, but now I can't remember. Last night's show with these three guys, you played that, which I want that link to.
No, just go to The Onion. It's there in the videos.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Anyway, but the fact that here they bring up these titles, the, you know, it's the lingo. It's the lingo that sways the blind. I guess they're blind. I don't know. Like you said, you know that your listeners are aware of this, but, I mean, the other people that are like, wow, you go and you read in these different blogs and say, oh, wow, that's going to benefit me. I need that money right now, you know.
Yay, free money for me.
Yeah. It's like your kid.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, I had one of those little teaching moments with my kids one evening. We were out somewhere, and we walked into an establishment, and there was a little buffet set up at the end. And they said, look, Daddy, they're giving away food for free. And what it was a happy hour buffet.
Right.
And I said, kids, this is a teaching moment. There ain't no such thing as a free lunch. That food is not free. Every bit of it has been calculated into the cost of the booze that they're selling. Really? Uh-huh. It's not there because they want to feed you. It's there because they want you to buy the booze. And you know, other little moments.
And it also increases your stay time, by the way.
Right. Sure it does.
And
which increases your booze consumption.
Sometimes it's a state issue also, so if you have food, then you have less harassment.
But, you know, another evening we were at the movies, and they, Daddy, why is the popcorn so salty? Well, kids, that's because they want you to buy a Coke. Because they make more money on the soda pop than they do on the food.
Oh.
And, you know, I hate to say it. Sometimes I feel sort of bad because I feel like I'm just doing way too much in the way of, you know, sort of making for some rather jaded little 10, 11, and 12, and 13-year-olds and so forth.
A little pessimistic, aren't you?
But somebody has to. Is anybody out there? I mean, does anybody watch the network news anymore? Is there anybody on the news saying, by the way, America, this is a dodge. This is a scam. This is phony. This is ginned up, and you could just about expect to do as well going down the midway at your local state fair.
See, and you know, I refuse. You know, I really refuse to watch the national media news. I just get pissed off. So I can't even say whether anyone has, but I'll take a jab at it and say no. But the thing that I find amazing, you know, it's like, even, I don't know, sometimes it's like we try to convince ourselves, you know, well, you know, it'll be good for right now, but we'll have to deal with it later, kind of thing. You know, it's kind of like when you're out there spending what you shouldn't be spending, you know. It's when you're trying to outdo the Joneses, kind of thing. And you know, anytime the government is giving you money, you're losing something, right? I mean, come on.
Yeah, well, it's going to be got back on the back end somewhere.
Right. Well, they're going to give you money, like they come in and take your land because it's what's the terminology? I'm running blank on that one, but it's, you know, where they can just come in.
Like eminent domain?
Thank you. They can just come in, and they can give you whatever price that their little analyst guys can analyze for it, you know. It's always bad. You know, people say, like, when Elizabeth was, my daughter was, 1.5. We were by ourselves. And I had to get assistance. I had lost my job, got laid off right before Christmas. I was working at what was called it's like Home Depot, but it was a different store.
Yeah.
Anyways, they're no longer around. But they laid me off right before Christmas. They laid 4 of us off. Now, after Christmas, they hired back those other 3, okay? But they had to lay off, you know, a few people with me so it wouldn't look bad, right? Because I was pregnant and they're laying me off, you know. That doesn't work kind of thing.
Right.
So I had to get assistance. And, you know, everybody thinks that, oh, welfare, that's free, right? Well, it gets paid back, by the way. You know how it gets paid back, Bob?
How's that?
The father, if the father's paying child support.
Oh, gosh, yes.
The father pays in child support, they deduct that out.
Yeah, before the mother ever sees a penny.
Right. So don't believe that, you know, people are, you know, just sucking on the tit of the American taxpayer. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I know.
You know, I mean, and this Nancy Pelosi, Dianne Feinstein, give in to FISA, you know, I mean.
Oh, but we threw the little people a bone.
It is. It's just sickening. It's really sickening. People.
I mean, I'm not saying that working families can't use a couple of grand. Working families can use a couple of grand.
But
please understand the nature of this process, Michelle, was such that the initial plan that George Bush put forward had nothing in it. I mean, nothing with a capital N. It had nothing in it for 30 million working households of people who earn paychecks but don't make enough to pay income tax.
Oh, right, exactly.
An additional 19 million households would have received only partial rebates under the original Bush proposal. That's because the right wing and the Republican Party have this vile habit of assuming anybody who is poor is lazy. They equate it. They don't understand that hard work is not equated with good pay because they're the ones who created that system. They're the ones who pushed through right-to-work laws in states all over this country that's, you know, right to work for less, right to starve, right to get your job priced right out from under you.
Yeah, there's no overtime pay going on there.
No, that was the first Bush term when they started assaulting overtime.
Oh, yeah. And they did it. And people said, you know, they shouldn't have to. You know, how can these businesses get along with having to adhere to such government control? I mean, that's why they moved to Mexico. Hey, they aren't moving to Mexico no more. They're moving to China because they've already used Mexico. You know? What amazes me is even when you talk about how they don't even think about these people that don't pay much in on their income tax if they don't make that much income. They pay out yin-yang in sales tax, in cost of living taxation.
Sure, property taxes, user fees.
Right.
You know, all those little cards on the chance deck and the community chess deck on the Monopoly board.
Yeah, look at your phone.
Pay street repair fees, $25. That's the Republican approach to government, as long as we don't call them taxes.
Right. Yeah, and I saw that and I said, well.
Well, where are you going to spend your rebate check? I mean, you stand to get something on you stand to see something like $1,200 come in the door.
Well, we'll see.
And that's the thing. We're all going to run out to Walmart and buy the new flat screen TV, and that's going to stimulate the economy. No, it's not. That's like saying giving a junkie $50 to go or $100 to go and buy a little bag of smack is going to end his addiction. No, well, it's just going to prolong it.
But I want to know who's looked at this and said, okay, how's this going to affect the world market, right? And how is it that those countries, those people that own our debt, how are they going to look at that? And how are we going to keep telling them, oh, don't worry that the dollar's looking like crap. You know, please don't dump our bonds. You know, don't dump us all these dollars out on the market, you know. When we've got a government doing this, and then their budget committee sitting there and going $4.7 trillion, and they just kind of say it like it's no big deal, but I'm saying it the way everybody, trillion.
Yeah,
you know?
I know.
So, okay. I think I should let other people rant.
Michelle,
one of those people need to, and
yeah, and people are welcome to. That's what goes on here, and we will roll along. But thank you, Michelle.
Well, I appreciate it. I appreciate you talking on this because I think we all need to be able to explain it to others and discussing it, even though it's kind of like preaching to the choir, or we're all kind of on the same page.
Well, what's weird is this makes me sound like some sort of fiscal conservative.
Oh, yeah. It does, yeah. You're right.
But it's not, because I recognize that it's a shell game. And I just refuse to play. I don't play three-card Monte when I'm in the city. I don't drop money on the BB gun or the dart throwing games on the Carnival Midway. I don't go to palm readers, and I very seldom play the lottery. Okay, I play the lottery more than I do any of the others, but that's my retirement plan, so I get a break.
There you go. Got to have some kind of retirement plan in the Bush years.
But
yeah.
I guess somebody new to the program might think, wow, that Bob, he sure is mean. He don't want us to have free money.
That's why we need to discuss it.
Well, quick as you can prove to me the money's free, I'll be all for it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, anytime the government's giving it to you, it's going to hurt you in the...
Anytime the government's giving it to you, the government's giving it to you.
That's right.
All right. Michelle, all right. Take care, dear.
Okay, talk to you.
Okay,
bye.
Bye-bye. And onward. Hi, who have I got?
Hi there.
Hey, Susan.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say, Dennis, we're going to miss you.
Yeah, I know.
We needed you more than you needed us.
Oh, ain't that the truth?
Yeah. And...
Well, here, let's take a... Wait. Let's take a Dennis Kucinich moment. Okay?
Yeah.
Stand by just a sec.
Lord.
You know, there's more gone with Dennis's campaign than Dennis's campaign.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I have a problem with that song.
I know.
I watched John Kennedy be buried, and I haven't been able to stand it ever since. Oh, dear. Anyway, all those people that are going to go out and get those checks.
Yeah.
Before you do, go down to your local public library and check out and read a rather enjoyable, fun book called "The Moon Is a Harsh Mister," Robert Heinlein.
Yep.
And you will become acquainted with a principle called Ken Stuffel.
There ain't no such thing as a free lunch.
Exactly. Because you're going to pay, and you're going to pay big time for this. I won't, because we won't be getting it.
No, you could use it, but you won't be getting it.
No, we won't be getting it. We're on Social Security. But the people who are going to be getting it, if they're smart, buy heirloom seeds, dig up your yard next spring and plant those heirloom seeds, and then save the seeds from those plants so that you can plant again because you need it. It's not a recession coming, it's a depression.
Well, I've got another suggestion, Susan.
My husband lived through the first one.
I got another suggestion. Tell me what you think. For those who are going to get the rebate, and this is, I don't know, people may really get mad at me about this. If you're going to get the rebate, turn the rebate around and send it to the Horn. Make it do some good.
Yeah, you could do that.
Because then we'll take advantage of all the small business giveaways, and we'll expand facilities here like you can't imagine.
Oh, hey, I never thought of that.
You know, it's free money, remember? So, you know, what the heck?
And even if you can't bring yourself to do either one of those things, don't spend it. And for God's sake, don't put it in the bank. Stick it in the mattress.
Don't go buy some piece of imported garbage.
Yeah. Don't spend
it. If you want a new pair of shoes, find one of the last few American shoemakers left and buy American shoes.
If you want to stimulate the economy, don't go stimulating China's economy.
Yeah. Yeah, don't stimulate.
China's doing quite nicely.
Last I checked.
Of course, they're polluting the jeebers out of there.
Yeah, stimulate the environment. You know what? I can tell you, you know, we've had this thing going all month long. Rick Goodner promised to match dollar for dollar every single cent that came in. Yeah. And we're almost done with January, and we can't get to $1,000. Rick Goodner cannot get the Horn audience to pinch him for $2,000 or the $3,000 that we were trying to make in this month of January.
I've got a subscription, and then I think some.
Oh no! I'm not griping at you, Susan.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying, people, come on, we're on Social Security and food stamps. If we can manage to do it, why in the world can't you?
And so, I mean, it would tickle Rick to death for me to drop him an email and say, "Hey, dude, you have no idea what just happened." He would grin doing it.
Bob, do you know how much money we have left over after I pay my bills every month?
Sadly, I do.
Hundred and some dollars.
I know, and that makes me feel terrible.
No, you shouldn't. Hey, that means my Scotch ancestry gets a real workout. But you're one of those bills. I count you in as a bill. I put you in the budget. You're in there. Da-da-da-da-da. But people, if I can put the Horn in the budget, and we are this poor, and we've got medical expenses up the yin-yang. Neither one of us is in good health. For crying in the beer. What is your problem?
Well, I think we've hit on a theory, a hit on a plan. Stick a finger in George Bush's eye. Send the rebate to the horn.
That money to, yeah, send part of that rebate, quote, rebate check. I call it this century's version of the chicken in every pot. And you know what happened to the president that promised that.
Yeah. I know.
Send it to the horn. If you don't have to send all of it, just send part of it. Send it. I mean, geez, it's not like you were planning on it.
Yeah.
Now, I can understand it.
And I promise, we'll go stimulate some economy. I know a little, there's a little, see, let me, just to let people know how we operate here. We have a big, humongous box-style home improvement store about 10 miles away. No sense in giving them the free publicity. You can guess that there's one of two names, and you know which it's one of those two. On the other hand, about 2 miles from here, we've got a little hardware store. And when you walk in, you look down and you look on the floors, and they're those creaking hardwood floors that are stained and oily from 100 years of people needing a screw or a fitting or a piece of pipe, walking in and getting it. For 100 years
cool
or so.
The cool kind of hardware.
And yeah, and you pay a little bit more there. But when you walk in the door, they know your name. And you can be dumber than a box of rocks, which with many of these things I am. And you can say, here's what I'm doing, and they say, here's what you need. And you go out the door, and you know that you've helped keep a member of your community afloat.
And you know they haven't sold you something.
So that's my promise. As we, you know, as if you guys will put the bite on Rick Goodner, on his promise, I in turn promise that none of those funds for that are matched for building the studio will go to China. They'll go about 2 miles down the road next to the post office where my mother worked for 15 years. And where the general store for this community stood, and where the hardware still stands.
That's cool.
That's real cool.
Get off your duffs, people. Get off your duffs. What do you want? Egg in your beer?
What do you want, a rubber biscuit? Hey, Susan, thank you, dear.
No problem. And if and when you ever get your freezer working, invest in a whole bunch of flour. You're going to need it. Store it in the freezer. I know you bake your own bread, and I do too, and that's what I'm going to be doing. I'm buying flour in bulk. I found out you can keep it in the freezer long term.
the freezer would be nice. Of course, I've still got to replace the element in the brand new stove that blew up, but that's another story entirely.
Oh, no.
Susan, we'll talk soon. Beautiful. Take care.
Yeah, you have a nice day.
You too.
Bye.
All right, we'll take a little break and come back and look at some of the more... Oh, geez, Bob, that was loud. Some of the more interesting facets of the rebate tax dodge giveaway rubber check. This is The Horn.
Fashioned imperialist. He may not have a mill, but he has a lot of grist. Chinese convict labor will manufacture this. He is a new fashioned imperialist. He's a new fashioned imperialist. High Walmart is the battle cry that rings out in the mist. His loyal friends would love to give him the Judas.
a giant SUV. Stop all who resist. We have lots of oil. He will still insist he is a new fashion imperialist. We need to take their oil. If they still resist, he is a new fashion imperialist. He's a new fashion imperialist. He's a new fashion imperialist.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Ford and the UAW drove another nail into the coffin of good middle-class U.S. auto jobs Thursday with the announcement of a negotiated buyout offer going to all 54,000 UAW Ford workers. Ford is offering the one-time cash lump sums to get rid of well-paid auto workers so they can be replaced with workers earning half their wages. Ford says it lost $2.7 billion in 2007. That's an improvement over the previous year. The Ford buyout offer comes on top of GM's similar new buyouts this year, part of a strategic plan by the U.S. automakers to destroy good wages and benefits won through decades of struggle by the UAW rank and file. Similar buyouts were offered in 2007. The U.S. House has a deal with the White House on an economic stimulus package aimed at trying to ease the effects of a recession. If you're poor but earned at least $3,000 in 2007, you'll get a $300 check. Workers who made $75,000 or less will get a $600 check. Married couples who earned $150,000 or less will get $1,200 under this plan. The Senate, though, will have to agree before those checks are in the mail. The House version of the stimulus does not extend unemployment benefits, and it does not increase food stamp allotments. With fewer demands on the table, the writer's strike is closer to an end. Jesse Russell reports.
Writers are itching to get back to work in Hollywood, but they aren't quite there yet. In order to move discussions forward, the Writers Guild of America has removed from the bargaining table demands to be allowed to organize reality and animation writers. The guild has argued that they should be able to represent the reality show writers because, while they're called reality shows, the writers essentially have to take hours upon hours of footage and weave a linear storyline. Still on the table is the core of the strike action, demands for residuals from work appearing on new media. The Directors Guild of America is currently set to vote on a contract that they reached with the producers that would allow for 2% of revenue from work that appears online. If the writers and producers can come to an agreement similar to the Directors Guild, then it could save the Academy Awards, which are scheduled to air on February 24th.
Teamsters President Jim Hoffa says he's disappointed by a U.S. Court of Appeals refusal to enforce its decision striking down a Bush Transportation Department rule extending truckers on the road hours from 10 to 11 hours. The Teamsters say allowing Bush to extend the hours truckers are allowed to be behind the wheel each day is a traffic safety hazard. Here's today's economic report. Median home prices fell 1.8% in 2007 for the first annual decline in four decades. Home sales were down 13%, the biggest drop in 25 years. With the housing crisis wiping out untold billions in wealth, now comes news that Wall Street and bankers are nervous about a potential new crisis, a bond insurance crisis. Two large companies, AmBac and MBIA, insuring bonds worth more than $1 trillion, are struggling. And if they fail, pension funds and banks could see billions of dollars in losses. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
It's your second hour in the liberal sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
There are other issues out there, and we'll hit them tonight. We got time. Two more hours left in the program. Plenty of time for your conversation, your commentary, your cussing and discussing. Contribution just rolled in, said keeping the lights on, keeping the lights shining. Keep the lights shining, and we will. We absolutely will. Another query. How about if I split the Bush giveaway and give Horn half and Cindy Sheehan the other? Fine by me. I was thinking about it during the little break we had, though, and I want to I'm going to use the still photos and video to catalog and capture the entire process as we do begin work on the new studio. And I got to thinking, wouldn't it be interesting to photograph every single thing that goes into the new studio and document Made in USA? And I'm sure John Fox wouldn't mind creating a separate page on the Horn website for those photos, down to the tiny, from the sheetrock to the sheetrock tape to the mud to the tiniest screw to the wire molding to the fixtures. Made in USA. I think that's pretty cool. I hope you guys aren't put off by that. But you know what? That's what's going to happen. As we expand our reach into the realm of new media, we will do it to the extent humanly possible, knowing that we have helped keep afloat some other American worker. Fair? If we're going to talk it, if we're going to talk the talk, we'd best by God be willing to walk the walk. On the other hand, if we do it on the cheap, it's harder to make that guarantee, because that's the allure of Chinese slave labor. It's cheap. And it can bypass America. And that's how it can be cheap. So, a little bit more detail, just a little bit more detail on this much ballyhooed rebate. And please understand, you are in a distinct minority engaging in this conversation, because all across the fruited plain, as it were, America is hollering, "Free money, yay!" To address the mortgage crisis, this from the AP story, to address the mortgage crisis, the package, now, I'm not calling anybody out or singling anybody out, but, you know, Susan addressed the issue of making her mortgage payment every month, and most of you guys, everybody, you've either got a mortgage payment or a rent payment, or something associated with keeping your house going. And it has to be paid every month, especially now. To address the mortgage crisis, the package raises the limit on Federal Housing Administration loans, FHA loans, government-guaranteed, government-backed loans, from $362,790 to $729,750. Hear it again. From $750,000 limit on FHA loans to $750,000 on FHA loans. I am trying inside my tiny mind to come up with a way of comprehending that without screaming. We're going to give people who make at least $3,000 and don't necessarily pay income tax, we're going to give them a check for $300. Don't spend it all in one place, buddy. On the other hand, we are going to offer people living in $750,000 homes a government-backed loan at preferential interest rates. Now, you don't have to wise me up. I know that there are places in this country where $1 million house is a 3-bedroom, 1,200 square foot ranch. Okay, I know that there are places in this country where you can buy a worn out piece of junk that would be better remodeled with a book of matches than hammers and nails, and it can cost you $1 million. I understand that. That's not most of America, though. But ask yourself, you who make the monthly income match the monthly output, whether you like it or not, ask yourself, what need does a person who can qualify for a $750,000 home mortgage need with your, remember, George Bush always describes it as your money? Because it's your money. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. The ceiling used to be $750,000. Now the ceiling is going to be $750,000 for FHA loans, allowing more subprime mortgage holders to refinance into federally insured loans. To widen the availability of mortgages across the country, it also provides a one-year boost to the cap on loans that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac can buy, from $417,000 to, again, nearly $750,000 in high-cost markets. You okay with that? Was that what we traded a little bit more money to pay the power bill every month to unemployed workers for? Was that what we paid? Was that what we traded a boost from $3 a day on food stamps for? Yay, but I'm getting $300. When was the last time? Never mind. No rhetorical questions. I'll tell you this. We pile the whole fam-damily into the family truckster and go to the movies. The last time that happened, by the way, was 2 years ago. We go through a drive-thru, you know, because it's a night out with the family. Not even a sit-down dinner. You go through the drive-thru with four young'uns and two adults, and you're out the other end of the Wendy's Burger King McNightmare. $40 gone, at least. And then you go to the movies, and by the time you get home, and you factor in the gas, and you factor in McNightmare, and you factor in the movie ticket price, you've just dropped $150 with no profligacy whatsoever. And America's going to get all worked up about a $300 check that's going to go into the federal deficit? And I know this makes me sound like a real jerk. I feel positively old-school paleo-conservative Republican talking this kind of stuff. But it's because the theory behind it is so absolutely, inexpressibly flawed. We're going to stimulate the economy by getting people who are already strapped for cash to go out and waste money. Somehow, and granted, I don't have the highfalutin dismal science economics degree, somehow that just smells funny. Okay, I'll say it, it smells stupid. You want to stimulate the economy? Well, there's better ways of doing it. Like helping a discouraged worker. Oh, darn. I'd be out there putting 40 hours in today, but I just can't get my shoes on. I'm discouraged. There's all kinds of good jobs, and I just keep on not taking them, even though they'd pay me money. 'Cause I'm a discouraged worker. My wife, she's a discouraged worker, too. And a discouraged mom. And a discouraged homemaker. But she has to keep on making the home and being a mom, whether she's discouraged or not. I just heard from someone in chat, I got my recertification for food stamps this year. My monthly stipend went down to $65 from $67. Yay. Well, you know, you were probably hoarding that extra can of soup. What's it going to take for the so-called representatives of this country to wake the hell up? You and me, via federal guarantees, are going to back a home loan for somebody who's living in a $750,000 house? And we're going to subsidize people who want, industrialists who want to buy a new plant? And they can write that off of their taxes? Tell me, who's getting more of the welfare here? It's certainly not the discouraged worker who's not getting a damn dime because there's no work to be had. He could use a couple of grand. Maybe catch up on the rent or the mortgage. Maybe actually have a decent home-cooked meal. Or a full tank of gas so he can get out to job interviews. But being a discouraged worker and off the rolls of the unemployed and not paying taxes, well, she's not eligible. She doesn't need to stimulate the economy. She doesn't need to be stimulated. See, that's the thing at the end of the day. It's not the economy that needs stimulating. It's the American people. And the American people need to be stimulated to go out and understand what they're doing when they go and buy the Chinese crap. Because also at the end of the day, you understand that the Republicans know where the money's going to go. And they know that George Bush has hung so much bad paper all over China that China has got to get a cut. What's that you say? You will get a full tank of gasoline with it? Oh, good. We'll send $100 or so over to a country that hates our damn guts, who can then use some of the money we send over there to print little textbooks that tell little Muslim boys to kill little Jewish boys. Charming! Maybe we just see too much of this. Maybe we see it too clearly. Speed is of the essence, said Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson. What a con. What a fraud. What a ripoff. Charlie Rangel said, I do not understand and cannot accept the resistance of President Bush and Republican leaders to including an extension of unemployment benefits for those who are without work through no fault of their own. The administration signaled its semaphore. It's unlikely to welcome efforts to broaden the measure, and pressure was mounting in the Senate to accept the hard-won deal. No. No. How's about, for once, the Democrats get a little bit of spine about them and stand up for working America and say, uh-uh, George, this is your mess, you made it, it's your baby, you bathe it. What obligation does Nancy Pelosi or Harry Reid have to bail out George Bush once again? What obligation do Nancy Pelosi or Harry Reid have to get in that long and undistinguished line of people that begins with the Bin Laden family bailing out our Busto energy on forward through the miserable failures and excesses and excuses of George Bush's misbegotten, misspent life? The list of people who have saved his butt. The list of people who, when his bacon was in the fire, have come and hauled it out when he says, "Ooh, I'm beginning to sizzle now." That's not a nice group of people to be in. When does the time come? You know, us, folks who are, you know, getting by, scraping by, making a living. Some better than others. Nobody comes along when we start hollering it's getting hot in here. We get told that we've got to be personally responsible. And we've got to have a stiff upper lip. And we've got to pull ourselves up by our own bootstraps and remember that a rising tide lifts all boats. When we're sitting there bobbing in the sea with no damn boat, and the rising tide's just covering our damn heads. When does George Bush get to have some personal responsibility of his own? Can you answer me that question? And I'm sure, and I know what the other side of this argument is. Well, you know, we're putting politics aside for the good of the American people. Well, is it really good for the American people to take them out on a spending binge to benefit Walmart? Is that good? Because if it is, we're going to have to sit down and have a long conversation about what the meaning of good is. There are people in America who are hurting, and this thing does nothing for them. Nothing. There are people in America who are hungry, and this thing does nothing to put a meal in their bellies and keep food on their tables. There are people in America who need real relief. A lot of them live along the Gulf Coast and in New Orleans and along the Pacific Northwest. And this thing does them no good. But it does real good for people who need a government-insured $750,000 mortgage bailout. I guess I'm just being an ass. But I can't see where this is anything but a con. Of course, we must remember Fields' rules. Best learn to live by these. Write these down. Find them on the internet somewhere and print them out and have them where you can look at them every day, because we're moving into a time when they're going to serve you a hell of a lot more good than the Ten Commandments. One, you can't cheat an honest man. Two, never give a sucker an even break. Three, don't smarten up a chump. Well, we ain't chumps, and we're smartening up. Let's go to the phones. Hi, who have I got?
Hey, Bob.
Hey.
How you doing, Gary?
Hey, Gary, what's up?
going on, man? I tried to help you guys out a little bit with a little bit I could.
I appreciate it.
Something.
We do sincerely appreciate it, and Rick Goodner will match it dollar for dollar.
Since I'm pretty much kind of through with the Democrats and spending the candidates' money, I said maybe I need to start spreading it out to some other things that I kind of support.
I like to think that's a good idea.
Yes. Now that I see our boy Dennis is gone, and you know, I'm down to my last two, so you know that's what it is. But you know, talking about this whole thing about the mortgage thing, you know, I was talking to somebody last night about this, and you know, I think people don't understand like the severity of this whole thing. If you think of this as very like this, let's say you have a business and you take out a loan from the bank. You take out that loan in the hopes that your business is going to be able to pay back that loan, correct?
Right.
And then that you're going to generate extra income from that after that loan is paid off.
That's you're going to make the money make you money.
That's right. But look at it this way. Look at each person's house that they took out over the last couple of years, speculation and all this other thing. People use their houses almost the same way you would use a business in some sense. They really were looking for to really kind of generate income, not short-term income, and even somewhat long-term income. And if you think of it just from a business standpoint, they basically have taken out a loan, and now their business model has failed because now they actually are losing money on their business. But here's the kicker. The house is now not even generating any income, not for a year, not for the next couple of years, not even every month.
No, it's become a liability.
Exactly. Now, if you look at it from that perspective, say, look at just from that, you have basically millions and millions of businesses failing around you. That is the severity of what has happened in this country. And that is why I think the caller, when she was saying earlier, I'm kind of scared that we're not actually going into a recession, but we actually may go into a depression if you actually just look at it from that point of view. And I think, you know, when I hear people talk about it, I think they don't understand how the financial system and the banks are set up. They basically now are just moving paper around, and they don't have anything to back up these businesses, so to speak, they've lent money to. And it's a lot of businesses. I mean, you know, it's just a lot of businesses. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And you know, the fact of the matter is, Gary, they're not even moving paper anymore.
Exactly.
They're just moving electrons.
The fact that the Dow went from 300 down, opened yesterday at 300, and went up at the end of the day 300, tells you there's no accountability in the system. Nobody knows what's going on. That's a 600-point swing within 12 hours. That is very much the same kind of thing that happened. I studied a little bit of the Great Depression, you know, back when I was in school. And if a lot of people go back and read up on it, you see a lot of the same similarities. They had, like, a lot of credit outstanding in housing and the different things. And it's just a very kind of similar situation. It's a little different. Just a lot of the same things. It's just like the Great Depression. And, you know, I'm not one to say that that's where we're definitely going. But, you know, sometimes I do concern myself that you know, hey, maybe this thing is really, you know, really, you know, it may even be worse than the Great Depression.
Well, and that's the thing. We say Great Depression, Gary, and a lot of us have different images in our mind. But the Great Depression was actually a perfect storm, to use the phrase, because it had an environmental component, because you also had the Dust Bowl happening at the same or similar time.
Drought, yeah.
A function of, you know, wind and erosion and bad crop management and drought, and that caused mass migrations of humanity, you know, the whole Grapes of Wrath thing. You had just absolutely what you just said, absolute unaccountability on Wall Street. So you had, you know, the guy the barber down at the barber shop on the corner, he was heavily invested in leveraged stocks on the market, so that when the market crashed, you know, he got margin called.
Yeah.
You know, because he'd bought on the margin. He'd put down 10%. Hoping, and there you are with what you were talking about a couple of minutes ago, he put down 10%, hoping the 10% he put down would buy back the 90% and then begin making him money.
Yep.
And he got his margin called.
Yep.
And so you had that. Then you had the banking collapse. You had a collapse of confidence in the currency. You had unemployment issues, and so it all combined to produce just abject, you know, something that went beyond the idea of a recession into full blown depression.
Yeah, you know, and the thing is, you know, and that if you look at today's society, you know, you take all those things together, we're not far off from that.
No, we're not, and that's what I was going to do. You know, let's tick through the list. Do we have an ecological disaster, an environmental disaster that has caused a mass migration of human beings?
Yes.
We sure do. Do we have unaccountability on Wall Street?
Oh, yes.
You know, to the point that the last Democrat just resigned from the Securities and Exchange Commission in disgust?
Yep, we have that.
How many people bought into the television commercials inviting them to sit behind their computers and become day traders?
Yep, that's 1999, definitely.
So, I think the stuff is there. The factors are there, or the elements, if you will, of the condition are there. The symptoms are all pointing to the name of the disease.
Let's ask a couple, though. Do we have corrupt politicians who are on a take?
And have been for several years. Absolutely.
And that was actually a part of it. I mean, I forgot which was the one who came out and said that, which one was it that came out and talked about the bankers being corrupt?
That was FDR, I think.
Yeah, but there was one of the other presidents came back and did kind of later on regretted some of the stuff that he signed during the time of the Great Depression when he gave, you know, the banks when they started secretly selling stuff.
Well, you know, yeah, Wilson leaves office, and then you get Warren G. Harding, who dies in office after a sort of Clinton-esque affair. He is succeeded by Calvin Coolidge, who is followed by Herbert Hoover.
Yeah. So you have that. You have a corrupt political system kind of in place. The only thing that's kind of a little different now is that we have two things. I think we have one thing that's a little bit more. I don't know. I think we have a problem with, you know, well, of course, during that time, you know, you also come out of the war of, you know, of World War One, and there was some expenditures there. But even though, you know, some people say you actually, that helps the economy for a while and actually led to it, I always say you still are kind of taken away from any country innovation and energy whenever you engage into a war. And I always believe that whenever you engage into a war, very rarely are you going to see major economic upturns in the economy. Even though some people may disagree with that, I think that wars always have destroyed big, you know, huge.
Right, because it's cause and effect. For every upswing, you have a downturn.
Yeah, I mean,
and what you see after the Second World War is an attempt to stave that off by putting the country on a permanent war footing with the creation of the military-industrial complex.
Right. And the same thing with the Russians. You go to Afghanistan. I mean, you go, you know, with Britain, and then they had to finally pull out of Egypt, you know, in the 50s or whatever. So, you see that the British Empire falls because of that. So it's like, you know, this whole conquest and imperialism thing. There's a point where you do have to stop it, where it just doesn't.
And that's another factor we have to check off on our little checklist, Gary, because following the First World War, you went into the so-called Roaring Twenties under Republican rule, and so, you know, you could roughly say that might be, you know, George Bush's first Gulf War, or you could say it's this war. And that created a sap on the economy. Although I think the sap on the economy created by the Iraq occupation is a heck of a lot more of a drain than anything that World War One ever was on the U.S. economy back then.
Yeah, well, I think. But today we have like something to me is a little different. Is that we have two things going on. We have globalization, number one, and number two. I'm just talking just for our country, and then
yeah.
You have the oil crisis, which everything kind of, the way our lives are structured, when you look at suburbia, you know, there's like a little supermarket down the street from me. I could walk there, and I would prefer to walk there because it's good for my health, but I can't walk there because there's like, it's right next to a road. They haven't built any sidewalks there, so if I have to
Yes, you could.
So why I was thinking, so why don't they just put a sidewalk there, and then people in all these little high-rise buildings or whatever, they could just walk there. So what I'm saying is that our actual landscape and suburbia and all these places are not even designed to conserve energy, because that's where we have to go to now. We have to not look for new energy sources first. We need to first start thinking about conserving energy. And we're not even there yet. We don't even have a society structured to conserve energy.
We are not even thinking about it outside of a very limited number of fora. We're not even thinking about conserving energy.
Exactly. Instead of giving us back $140 billion, I would rather take that money and build a sidewalk where I could probably save some gas if I just walked. I would get healthier because I'm walking, which would keep me out of the hospital and run up costs for X, Y, and Z. See, it's that kind of, like, short-term thinking by our government. It's just amazing. Why don't they just take that money, like I just said, and use it to build a more society that's built on conservation? Somebody should just say, hey, you know what? We're going to come up with this new conservation, and all cities will be remodeled around this concept, and we're going to come in with ideas, yada, yada, yada. You know what I'm saying? And we're going. That's what we're going to do. That's what I would like to see the candidates, Hillary. You know, and I think Dennis had actually talked about something like that, but of course he's gone now. So, but that's the type of thinking that we kind of need right now—a little bit forward thinking, as opposed to being concerned about what somebody did like 10 years ago.
Sure. And well, this is, but that's the whole thing behind this this current dodge, Gary, is that it is. It's so a function of our national attention deficit disorder. What we need is long-term solutions, and we're getting short-term feel-good fixes.
Exactly. We should have a national sidewalk initiative.
Yeah, a national for that, you know, and make that part, make that a sub you know, a substrate of a national infrastructure initiative.
Yeah.
You know, from rail to highways to bridges. I read something the other day where someone commented on the fact that America can now no longer guarantee that people can cross the Mississippi River without getting killed. Just as a sort of an expression of how far we've fallen. And it's true. I mean, you know, what was it? The I-35 bridge or whatever it was in Minneapolis?
Yeah, the one, yeah.
We can't safely cross the Mississippi River anymore.
But, you know, I think, I don't know how you think about that. I think when I see those things happen, those little things, I always look at those things as signs. It's almost as if, like, you know, whatever is looking over America, whatever you want to call it, it's like, here's something, see people, see, you saw that happen, never mind, oh, those poor people, you know.
But if you look at it as a symptom of a disease, and I think that's what you're describing, it takes on an entirely different level of significance.
Yeah.
Just like Katrina wasn't just a storm. It's a warning sign. It's the first little bloody cough that speaks of tuberculosis.
We can't have people walking to a bar because they get healthier. Then, you know.
No. We can't have people.
They won't make any money. I mean, the big pharma and stuff. That's not good for them.
No.
We can't. If you know, if somebody brings up a sidewalk of people getting healthy initiative, that's not any.
No, and we can't do that any more than we can here in this little rural area that I live in. We can't have a local wellness center that would feature treadmills and bicycles and maybe a swimming pool so folks that weren't terribly mobile could still get meaningful exercise. We can't have dietitians and nutritionists coming in and teaching people about the perils of prepackaged, pre-processed foods and how to actually cook. And we can't have agricultural extension agents who are on site who can help people get the most out of their gardens in any given summer. We can't have any of that because we got to blow up Iraq.
Got to it. And everything's going through the roof. Went to the dentist, you know, and then for like 20 minutes, and the amount of money that he charged just to do a teeth cleaning now is just crazy compared to what he charged me just a couple of years ago.
And you know what that's a function of, right?
What's that?
Dental coverage has just about disappeared. And when people have dental insurance, What dental insurance they have pays very, very little as compared to the cost of the procedure. So the dentists have to inflate their prices to, because most of what they're getting is in cash pay.
Yeah. I mean, I don't actually have health coverage, but I don't have like dental. I just pay it, out of pocket. I just put, I have money aside for that, but
yeah.
I just pay it out of pocket. I mean, it's not so much that it's like, I can't get it done and I need coverage. Even though I heard some people getting good plans on that, but when I figured out when I was paying the coverage, when I added it up, it was just, I only go, two times a year, and I was like, I don't know, but, it just didn't, the way it added up, it was almost more if I had the insurance than if I just paid out of pocket.
Well, and that's basically what my dentist said to me the last time we had this conversation. He said, dental insurance? Are you kidding? On the one hand, most people can't have it, and if they can have it, it doesn't provide a hedge against what they need dental insurance for. I mean, there are a million ways to stimulate this economy if people are willing to think about it. Frankly, universal health care, single payer health care would be the biggest economic stimulus we could possibly have, because then it would take a big millstone around from around the neck of what large manufacturing we have left in this country.
The only thing about that is that, and this is where I hear, and this is why I really don't trust some of the candidates when they mention that, because I worked on a lot of different types of business models when I was in advertising doing things. And the one thing I kind of understand, and I dealt with a lot of corporate lawyers, I think the one thing that we have to think about the universal health care is that it has to be something that won't be able to be mandated. I think that the way that you have to go about it, and I think the Democrats should probably just come clean with people and say, look, we're going to take the profit motive out. Because reality of the fact is the healthcare industry is really privatized to almost 100%, really. Look, they own all the models, the systems, and the profits, and they're in Wall Street right now. The government can't go in there and just take it over, because those corporate lawyers will freeze them down in so much litigation, it'll take 20 years to do it. But if you go in and put certain mandates in to where it takes out the profit motive, those businesses and those people who own those businesses, who sell those businesses on the cheap to the government or to whoever, people who actually are concerned about health care, and then at that point, you can go ahead and slowly move it into a more managed kind of government thing. And that's really my opinion.
Well, isn't that the heart and soul, though, of H.R. 676, the Medicare for All Act?
From what I understand, yeah, exactly. It's more of like a bridge. So it's a bridge kind of thing.
It extends.
I don't know the whole thing because I haven't read it, but from what I understand about, I've read about different things of these different proposals. I've read like
it's simple and it's elegant in its simplicity. It extends Medicare to every American.
Yeah.
Now, on the other hand, if you want to keep your for-profit health care, I think people should be free to do so. If they want to continue paying out of their own pocket, so that the insurance company can tell them that they can't have the operation that they need when they need to have it, that's fine by me. But the way we begin is to extend some form of medical coverage to every American.
Well, see, that's what went because I think John Edwards was the first to release his. Then I think Hillary did hers, and then Obama came out like a week after hers, if I remember correctly. I think they all came out of Mayweather. And what I understand is what John Edwards was kind of going from that. But I think now what I'm hearing is everybody's talking about this universal health care, and they're fighting each other over it. And I just think that, I think people need to understand that you're not going to get universal health care like right off the bat. I mean, it's something that has to be a bridge to it. And I think that's what I'm really kind of, concerned about, because the thing I think would really hurt Hillary when the first time she tried to present it was that she was trying to push something through that you're just going to get into a head fight with. I think that you just have to push through something that, as you say, takes away the profit motive. And I think that has to be, you have to have an end game in this, because you're going into a battle with these people, and you have to just turn around and say, look, what feeds their fire? And it's profits. And if you make it so that it's not profitable to them, they'll slowly slink away. But if you come in there right off the bat with the hammer and show them your hand, this is what you're going to do, they're going to fight you to the death. I mean, so it's I think it has to be some kind of backhanded way to do it. I could be wrong, but I just don't feel strongly that you can just go straight into American corporate system, because what it does is then you're going to get the major resistance that will not bring about change. You know what I'm saying? That, to me, that's what's really what's going to be the big fight, and I think you have to have kind of a backhanded.
And that's what disturbs me about the health plans that as I understand them, that have been put forward both by Obama and by Clinton, is the fact that they continue to deal in the profit motive. They let the private insurance industry, they use government money to buy insurance from private insurance companies. And private insurance companies thereby are still building a profit motive into their coverage. And the same hateful person who's on the end of the line going, no, you can't have the operation, is still there. Because the same corporate policy is still in place that says, you know, the more that you can turn down, the bigger your Christmas bonus will be. That really is how the healthcare industry works.
Yeah.
People's performance bonuses are based on how much healthcare they keep people from getting.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, all you got to do is, like you said, you watch like Sicko. I mean, I've been through this whole thing with the healthcare industry just with my own family life and the stuff that I've seen, you know, some of my uncles and aunts getting sick with diabetes and stuff like that. And fortunately, a lot of them had kind of like state, you know, they worked for, you know, the state and they had pretty good health care. But when I saw those bills that they were getting, just a small operation, it's like $250,000 to put a stent in someone's leg, or it's like crazy. I mean, $250,000.
Yeah, and you have to ask, and it's real, you know, bean counting accountancy, to ask, where does that money go?
Well, I'll tell you this: one of my uncles had an operation the other day, and he had an operation on his leg in a couple of hours. And he's putting, you know, a couple stents or whatever in, and when the initial bill, just the initial bill for that operation that happened, $60,000.
Wow.
1 hour, $6,000, maybe two doctors in the room. So let's break that out. You had two doctors in the room, maybe 2 or 3 hours, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I can see the health. They might have needed the room. You got to rent the room. They got the overhead. Let's say $10,000 for just the overhead. That's fair, right? That's kind of high, but it's fair. $10,000. So the two doctors in the room, you check all the stuff, basically, were worth $25,000 for 2 hours.
$12,500 an hour? See, I think there's some skullduggery in there, Gary. I mean, you talk about the
ten. Bob, it's beyond skullduggery. The same operation that, you know, you saw in the film Sicko, and the guy they did, I forgot, it was free, obviously, but the cost, I think they were estimating, might have been about somewhere between $6,000 to $2,000 in Canadian. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Right.
Ridiculous.
And that's what I'm saying. You gotta dig down a little bit lower, because you talk about the $10,000 for the room, okay. I guess does that include the nursing staff? Or, you know, does the nursing staff come out of the doctors? Or you see what? And you know, then there's the guy who comes in with the mop bucket after it's all over and makes sure the OR is sterile again.
Well, if you add it all up, I mean, I think in any situation, you're saying one person in one room in a hospital with many rooms, with many operations going on, you're probably talking about an operation that's making $2 million a day. I mean, no, more than $2 million a day, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You add all of that up, the amount of money that they're making shows you exactly why the companies are never going to give up. They're going to fight you kind of like John Edwards said, to the death. But being said, there's another thing that's going on that you probably know about, which is they were talking about there on the radio shows, where the toll roads are now being sold to these foreign companies in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, yada, yada, yada. Now, think about this. What does that mean? That means that the American people at this point won't have any political say over how they drive those prices over, because these corporations are going to be sovereign somewhere else.
That's right.
I guess, you know.
No, but you're so absolutely right. I mean, the thing about your hospital analogy is, remember, at the very top, and this is where the profit motive comes in, at the very top of that hospital that's privately owned, there is a chief administrator, okay? and he is making a doctor-like salary, and he's not even a doctor. Mostly he's a glorified accountant with maybe an MBA. And he's making a princely salary. Also factored into those costs is the nature of the corporation running the hospital, which is concerned first and foremost with, or should be concerned first and foremost under corporate principles, with paying a good dividend to their shareholders.
Plus bonuses.
Yeah. So you know it's not the RNs and the LPNs and the certified nursing assistants and the maintenance and janitorial staff that are driving costs up. In other words, it's not working people driving the costs up. It's the top heavy administration.
Yeah, your local hospital has become Ford Incorporated.
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah,
basically what happened.
I mean, we had this nursing strike over here in Beckley that went on for a couple of months, and it was miserable. And lo and behold, that hospital, which in this case was a not for profit corporation, okay, a non profit, Gary, that hospital was paying money out to run ads during the strike. That hospital also spent probably upwards of $1 million hiring a union busting law firm. And you know who pays for that? Some guy who comes in with a collapsed lung. You know, that's the picture of the profit motive inside healthcare.
And the thing is that, you know, I look at the whole situation and I say to myself, you know, I really do get mad. I get mad sometimes with African Americans. I get mad with, of course, whites because I'm African American. It's just sometimes like, you know, we get mad about stuff.
Sure.
Sometimes I get mad with some of the immigrants who come over. You know, or the Mexicans, I get mad with everybody, not because of who they are or what they are or whatever in the situation. It's the fact that we, as singular human beings, cannot see the value in each one of us, and that we allow these divisions or these little special interests. You know, because really the fact of what I really see was going in this country is going beyond race. I've always said, because I was down in, you know, I've been down in South America and different places like that, where, you know, class is more the thing there than just race. And with America, where I see so much of a class discrimination going on in this country now. And it's gone to such a high level. And yeah, it's kind of sometimes it's painted with race, you know, and that gets everybody high, or the women, they get women all hyped up and the fact of the matter is, it's the little people and the people at the top. That's the way it has always been. You know, sometimes, for the most part, they have been able to take people of color and always keep them in the box. But when all is said and done, Bob, it's always about those who have the most and those who don't. That's
sure.
The way, I mean, you know this. I'm not.
But there are inequities beyond that. I was listening, I was producing Guy James's show this afternoon. And he's at a grassroots healthcare forum in D.C. right now, and he had a lady on who works specifically with African American health issues, and she was laying out some statistics that were just—I mean, it was like being—I was sitting here, felt like I was just getting smacked in the head because, you know, I know that the inequities exist, but it's when you see the numerical value of the inequities that you really begin to sit up and go, "Holy cats!" She said, just generally speaking, she said, when white America gets a cold, black America gets pneumonia. And she said that, for instance, amputations as a result of diabetes, and this one just stuck with me, amputations as a result of diabetes are 90% higher in the African American community than they are in white America. And there's a reason for that. Because,
right.
Because diabetes is not adequately diagnosed in its early stages, it's not adequately treated as it progresses, and you wind up sitting there at the amputation stage because you haven't done the front end wellness care that could have prevented it from happening. I guess the classic example is the one that happened a couple of years ago with the young African American boy in Maryland who had a dental infection that spread into the rest of his skull and went to his brain because there was no dental, there was no childhood dental coverage for him. Now, by the time he got desperately sick, he went into the hospital, and something on the order of $780,000 was spent treating him, and he died.
Actually, I don't think that was a couple of years ago. Wasn't that like a year or two ago?
Yeah, I mean, it was in the last 2 years.
Yeah, the last 2 years. Yeah.
And then you know, so that's the failure of government providing for its most needful citizens. And on the other hand, you take this young lady, 17 years old, needing a liver transplant, who had for-profit health care, and her for-profit health care company says to her, no, you can't have the liver transplant because that'll affect my Christmas bonus. And then when they found out that she was going to die in a couple of hours, they said, okay, you can have the transplant now. So that way they never had to do the transplant, and the kid died, and so they were plus in the profit column. Now, when we've got a healthcare system that is predicated on those sorts of rationales, we have a system that is that you just can't argue anymore isn't broken into shattered into a million pieces.
For anything to be done anew at such a magnitude, isn't usually there's two options: radical revolution, or just let everything fall to the ground until you have to fix it. I mean, that's almost. Seem like that's it just to me. That seems where we're headed. It's like we're just going straight to, you know, it's just straight to the bottom all the way until we're just so low and it hits so many heads that people finally wake up to, and then some lone voice in the wilderness can cry out and everybody can just kind of shout as one. Because right now, it still seems like a lot of people just don't really understand what's going on. They're feeling it. They're starting to get a sense of it. But they still have yet to really connect the dots. And the dots is, you know, the big thing is the overarching thing, you know, that's not like, it's really greed. I don't know how you take that and extrapolate that and put that at the forefront, like, you know, Don Edwards is saying these corporations, but however you do it, but, you know, we talk about this, I said that what we need to have initiative, which says that the media, healthcare, and I think it's enterprise system, just a couple of things cannot be for profit in this country. And everything else can be free market. That's fine. But these three areas, critical areas, cannot be driven by the free market, because the free market is not in the best interest of the well-built.
Well, it can't be cured by the free market, Gary, because the free market is the problem.
No. What I'm saying is that we should have laws in place that health care, that the media, and I think you said the penal system and other things, must be run by a governing body and cannot be driven by a profit.
Oh, absolutely. If the state is going to sentence someone to prison, it is the state's responsibility to care for that individual.
Exactly.
Gary, I don't know what's going on, but for some reason or other, we're having a little bit of a breakup here. Thanks so much for your help, and thank you for your ideas. And
yeah, we'll keep talking that over the time. I try to catch you every now and then.
Yeah, and the trick is when we talk this kind of stuff here, the trick is to take it out and do something with it in the wide, wide world.
Yeah.
So that when you catch some conservative or something saying, well, you know, socialized medicine would make everybody sick, that you don't just sit by and let them get away with it, that you confront them with it. And by confronting, I don't mean taking your shoe off and hitting them in the head or anything, but that you don't let that kind of misdirection and deliberate deceptiveness, you don't let people get away with it. So, you know, at least I hope that's what I'm talking about when I talk about, you know, fostering a new American dialogue, discussion, debate, that kind of thing. That's where I'm going at, and I really appreciate the way that you're willing to process with me and work through things so that we can look toward figuring out what it actually means when we talk about what we want out of government.
Yeah. Okay, then, Bob, I'll let you go.
All right, thanks, Gary. Take care. Bye.
Bye
now. If you are on hold, please stay that way. Just going to take a quick little break, play some pretty music, and we'll come back. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, 304-658-5453, if you want to make the call on your own nickel. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Katie tried, I was halfway crucified, I was on the other side of no tomorrow. You walked in, and my life began again. Just when I'd spent the last piaster I could borrow. All night long, we would sing that stupid song. And every word we sang, I knew was true. Are you with me, Dr. Wu? Are you really just a shadow?
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Wrong button. One of these days I'm going to learn to drive this darn thing. 10 minutes past the hour of 8 o'clock on the East Coast. 10 after 5. Early afternoon on the West Coast. That is, if you're listening live. I probably shouldn't do that, those time check kind of things, because there's a lot of podcasting that goes on. Big part of this audience does not listen live, and I think that's cool. You know, if people will take it into their heads that they have power that they don't use, you know, for instance, I'll listen when I want to, I'll watch when I want to. then organizations beyond this one will begin to be significantly more sensitive to the needs of viewers and listeners and people who otherwise share their time. Let's see. Straight to the phones. Straight to the phones. Folks been waiting. Hey, welcome to the program. Who have I got?
Good evening, Bob.
Hey, David.
How you doing?
I'm good.
That's good. Sound a little bit angry in the beginning.
Well, I mean, look, I am, and sometimes it just sort of sneaks out, sort of, you know, gets over the transom, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, you gotta be angry, and that's why I called to share one of your fellow angry kindred spirits, I think.
Yeah.
Her name is Layla Anwar, and I'd love to read this blog entry to you.
Okay, go ahead.
It's very short. Americans and Westerners and Americans in particular keep complaining that their lives are so stressful. They carry their long faces along with their dead end weights and say, "Oh man, the stress." They uphold and constantly recreate the same system that makes them stressful. And if you listen to them close enough, you will realize they are nothing but a bunch of spoiled brats. They are stressed because they have valued work above everything else. They are stressed because they complicate their lives with stupidities and more things to manage. They are stressed because they have been led to believe that life owes it to them, that they are entitled simply because they are who they are. They are stressed because they produced and eat junk. Stop producing the shit and stop eating it, and you will not be stressed. They are stressed because stress becomes their raison d'etre, gives them meaning in life, for their lives are so effing empty of anything substantial. They rush to yoga and meditation classes to de-stress. They work out like addicts at the gym to keep fit so they don't have to be stressed. They run into lousy relationships because they are stressed from being alone. They acquire 20,000 things they do not need because they are stressed. They work like donkeys so they can make more and buy more so they can become less stressed. Yet they see none of that. They are just a bunch of whining jerks. Well, I will tell you what real stress is all about. Stress is when you have been with no water and no electricity for over 5 years. That is stress. Stress is when you have no job because some effing backward retard came and occupied your country, pillaged, and stripped you of your livelihood. That is stress. Stress is when you run from hospital ward to hospital ward, from prison to prison, from militia to militia, looking for your loved ones, only to recognize them from their teeth fillings in some morgue. That is stress, all right? Stress is when you pack your bags quickly and run to the nearest border, only to be asked to return. In the meantime, some American Western mother effer has bombed your house into a pile of stones. Yeah, that is stress. Stress is when you see your family and loved ones dying in front of your eyes, and you can't afford to buy them their basic medication to ease their pain. That is stress. Stress is when your baby girl or baby boy is born looking like effing Frankenstein because some American mother effer who is stressed out bombed your country with the U. Stress is when they walk in the middle of the night and you sleep with your clothes on because you don't want them to see you half naked just in case when they smash your door down, pull you from your hair, or stress out into the cold and place a sandbag over your effing head. That is stress. Stress is when you're a prisoner in your own country by some smelly, pimpled, stinking American who has not even finished high school, and stress is when the same mother effer rapes you and sodomizes you, tortures you, and calls you a dirty Iraqi in your own effing country. That is stress. You want to know about stress, you pieces of dung? I just gave it to you, what stress is all about. Now, tonight or tomorrow, if you collapse from a heart attack because of your stress, you earned it, you bunch of criminal bastards. May you be stressed till you effing croak, once and for all.
Hear, hear.
And let me tell you something. Her blog is so entertaining, not because of the fact of she has such a truthful sentiment like that, but the fact of how many people come and just hit with her with posts.
And which one? What is it? What is it again?
It's ArabWomenBlues.blogspot.com, and she's created a bit. She's got a bit of pulse on the cultural aspect of like Palestine and Middle Eastern issues. But what makes her unique is she's also featured a lot in Information Clearinghouse. They pick up her blog usually as a headline story. And I've been checking out a lot of her writings, and she gets a lot of comments after she says something. And the right-wingers do come out, but she gives as good as she gets, too. So,
well, good, because that's one, you know, I'm so done with right-wingers. You know, I the John and Peter and I were joking around the other night with, you know, how to deal with right-wingers on women's reproductive issues.
Right.
And I came up with this idea that the next time a right-winger comes up to talk to you about abortion, you ask them, well, wait a minute. I need to know, now we both know that the rapture's a-coming. I need to know if you believe when the rapture comes if we're going to get to keep our clothes on or not. And whichever position they take, you take the other one and say, I'm sorry, you have no credibility with me because you believe that when the rapture comes, we're going to be naked. So I can't talk to you about abortion. You have no credibility. Take one of theirs, jam it down their throat, and move on. Quit treating these people like they've got a valid place in the discussion. I mean, if you and I are sitting here and you share the ArabWomanBlues.blogspot.com, you share that, David, and some right winger comes along and says, "Yeah, but Maresy Dotes and Dozy Dotes and Little Lamsey Divey,"
and you just go,
"Shut up and get out of the way. We're trying to solve a problem here."
It's better that they hear it than better than they actually see someone getting choked, because that's what's going to happen if they don't let people express their sentiments.
Yeah, but do you understand what I'm getting at? The William Crystals of this world.
Oh, I understand.
Who are wrong 99.9% of the time. The Chris Matthews's, the Tim Russert's. At some point in time, somebody has got to John Stewart them, just like what he did to Tucker Carlson and killed Crossfire. Somebody needs to do the same thing to Russert and Matthews and O'Reilly and Crystal and all of these freaks, and that is to essentially look at them and say, you know, you're crazier than a sprayed roach. You're talking insane crap. We're trying to get something done here. We're looking for a solution to a problem, and you're part of the problem, so you can't be part of the solution.
You know what gets me is, like, when I see it's the punditocracy coming out in full force, and it's the same. And you know what? It's not just on the it's on our progressive shows too. For example, Real Time with Bill Maher. When I thought that was on the air, I was like, awesome. We're gonna have real discussion, real debate. Like I'm politically incorrect. No more Ann Coulter. Thank God. He brings out these people that they don't even deserve to talk. John Fund from
Baltimore.
He has no credibility. None.
He's a woman beater.
No, and here he is talking. No, here's what I want to know. When someone's in that meeting room, are they that stupid? Are they that scared to stand up and go, why are you inviting this loser? He's not even that entertaining. Invite someone who has something to say where you can encourage some kind of debate, who is coming from the right, but who just doesn't talk in little tiny soundbite talking points. And I'll tell you who else he had on, Bob. This really got to me. And I'll tell you why it gets to me, because it's that space. It's that space of time you see, Bob, and you're like, man, what the hell are you doing? You know this person is a waste of space when it comes to a commentary. And he had Tracy Adkins. You know that country singer? It's Tracy Adkins on you. And here's this guy sitting here. And you just say, well, we're doing a good job with our troops. And then he'd drink his water, set it down, wouldn't say anything for about 10 minutes. D.L. Ugly's making a brilliant point. By the way, you can listen to this on, you can watch the show on, UK YouTube or something.
Okay.
They put it up there. And while it's still there anyways. But the point is that there could be so much dialogue, and it could be so much entertainment still. But the fact is that it really makes me suspicious when they have John Fund and Tracy Adkins on, D.L. Ugly's brewing up a firestorm, and these guys can't even interact with him.
And that's the point. Stop booking them.
I know, that's what I'm saying.
Quit booking the freaks. The freaks have had their day in the sun. The story came, you know, I guess it got buried somewhere in the Washington Post, the story we were talking about last night, where the think tank comes out and actually documents the 935 lies leading to the Iraq War.
Yeah.
Quit even booking these people who were enablers of that thing. Don't have them on. They don't have a valid point anymore. The right to free speech is not the right to insane speech to a certain extent. This is, you know, if they want their free speech, give them a soapbox and let them stand on the corner next to the mailbox and scream their fool insane heads off. But quit giving them the cachet of legitimacy of saying that we're going to try to dialogue and debate with them, because there is no dialogue with them. There is no debate with them. We need serious people who want to solve serious problems. And you know what? Anybody who says, well, you know, the way we solve the health care crisis is with a tax break, that's not a serious person, and they don't have any business in the debate any more than somebody who said, well, you know, the way we solve the health care crisis is we ask the aliens for help. That doesn't work anymore.
You know the thing with Bush giving us a refund is kind of like a robber coming back in your house just to give you a little change back, just to insult you. Here you go.
Yeah, I just stole your silver. Here, you can have the pie server back.
You know, talking about the commentary of not saying anything on the TV, Aaron Magruder's Boondocks this week had a brilliant commentary on the usage of the N-word and how politically played out it becomes when you put it in the hands of two pundits. And they did a commentary where it involved it was involving Ann Coulter and this reverend named Rollo Goodlove from the black community. And they got into this match over the usage of the N-word that was used in the school system through one of the kids in the Boondocks. And they're back in the green room, and Yui's looking around, and Ann Coulter comes in with her black boyfriend. And she starts talking slang on the phone, and then she turns to Reverend Rollo Goodlove. So where are we off to next? Are we off to CNN next? Is that where we're going next? And then Yui's like, wait, don't you two hate each other?
Yeah, and only Bob, during the wrestling match.
If you can, Bob, you really have to check it out. I'll have to send it your way, because it's really a brilliant commentary on. And then they go into like the whole media circus about it, and the whole narrative of it, and how it all plays out, and the way he does it. For those people who don't know, Aaron Magruder is like the Gary Trudeau of the black world.
He's a genius.
He's that, and he's lost a lot of papers for what he said. So that's another reason why you should check him out, because who knows when Cartoon Network's going to get the shaft on this program, because we just keep dumbing the people down. But for now, he's that lone voice in the wilderness, and what he says has a lot of merit, and also what he illustrates and depicts. And you will learn so much just from African-American culture and modern pop culture and just everything synthesized in like a 25 minutes that you'll just be glad you tuned in and watched.
Well, I try to when I can, or catch it on the computer box, because it's tough to get in front of the TV much anymore. And God knows, I don't even know if we still got I don't know if we still got Cartoon Network work on our screwed up cable anymore. Oh, you know, if I was independently wealthy, I'd go and get Dish Network or something. But
well,
that's owned by
like
Murdoch.
Said, that's the beauty of the internet. They have a lot of different streams in place. I'll send you a link.
Oh yeah, well I sat and watched an Aqua Teen Hunger Force episode the other day that just broke me to pieces.
Yeah, that one right there. I mean, that was pretty interesting how they did it without the characters.
I know, it's like the characters are on strike.
Yeah, it's like the characters are on strike.
You know, I forget. You know, there'd be series out there where somebody hadn't signed their contract or was holding out for more money, so they'd just write them out of the series until they got the contract dispute. And I wondered if that was what was going on with Aqua Teen Hunger Force, if maybe that was a subtle way of saying, you know, we support the writers.
You know, Bob, on a parting note, those robots really, really, really do remind me of neoconservatives.
I think they're supposed to, David. I think they're supposed to. All right, man. Have a great night.
All right, later.
Later.
Bye.
And check out that blog he mentioned, arabwomanblues.blogspot.com. Hi, who have I got? Hello? Well, thought I had somebody. Are you there? Someday I'll have a handler. Listen, let me shift gears just for a moment with you, just to share the latest little bit of sleaze, the shock value, I suppose. You all know who, maybe you do, maybe you don't, who Roger Stone is, right? Roger Stone started his Republican dirty tricks campaigns way back when he was the youngest member of the Richard Nixon creep committee to reelect the president, dirty tricks squad. He has since been involved in all manner of dirty tricks for the Repig Lickin' party. And he's come out with his latest now. It's sort of a shot across the bow, if you will, an indication of how desperately the Repig Lickin' party is looking forward to running against Senator Clinton. And I've seen some right-wing Republican sleaze, and we all have. And once again, it's another one of those examples of every time we think we've seen the absolute sub-basement of Republican filth, they open up another trap door and go, no, it goes deeper. There's more slime. In this particular instance, it's the formation by Roger Stone, who in his group sex ads calls himself Dick Stone. No, really. This guy was splattered all over the tabloids. Sex orgy scandal. This from the 90s. Bob Dole's campaign wizard has been placing steamy wife-swapping ads in swingers magazines for 5 years. And Roger Stone's wife, Nydia, is even featured as this month's cover girl of Swing Fever, which is full of kinky ads from people looking for sex partners. Yeah, really. And another article, says, while Bob Dole campaigns on the moral crisis in America issue, one of his top advisors has been caught in a sleazy scandal. He and his wife frequent a group sex club and post notices on the internet and in swingers magazines seeking others to join them in orgies. The raunchy lifestyle of Roger Stone, a political strategist who has also worked in high positions for Presidents Nixon, Reagan, and Bush. Stone, 43 years old, has an office at the Dole for President campaign headquarters in Washington, D.C., and helped convince Dole to choose Jack Kemp as his running mate. Let's see. Yeah, here we go. They posted an ad on their internet website. The story's so old that website's in quotes. Which features a revealing picture of Nikki inviting couples or single men to join them for sex. The same picture appears in a notice in a Florida swingers magazine, which describes the Stones as a hot, athletic, attractive couple. The couple solicits sex partners in as many as 70 swingers magazines across the country. Nikki invited men in uniform to take part in sex games with her and Roger during the Republican convention in San Diego. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. This is another moral values repiglic, and so that's the background on Roger Dick Stone. And he has started a new 527 group. You remember 527 groups? Yep. And they're very proud of it. And, yeah, I'm going to tell you about it because this is disgusting. And it deserves, you know, if you run across one of those family values Republicans, tell them about Dick Stone, who worked for George H.W. Bush, who worked for Richard Nixon, who worked for Bob Dole, who worked for Ronald Reagan, all these family values return to moral decency candidates. The email website of his new 527 group was blast emailed to hundreds of thousands of addresses that Stone and other has accumulated over the years, working from over 170 different email lists. All they do is sell a T-shirt. That's it. No TV ads, no radio ads, just a T-shirt. The T-shirt shows a red square with converging diagonal lines coming to the center and then a straight line coming out of it and a little blue triangle with a white star in the middle. The name of the 527 group. You already seen this? Bart Kopp had it. I saw it earlier this morning at makethemaccountable.com. And I thought for a minute, oh, this has got to be a joke, but it's not. This is the way Republicans do business. This is the way Republicans campaign. This is the way Republicans seek power in this country. The name of the 527 group, Citizens, and you got to do the acronym word work here, Citizens United, Not Timid, a 527 organization to educate the American public about what Hillary Clinton really is. Citizens United, Not Timid. They're assuming that she is going to be the nominee, and they're already running against her. I'm sure there is a fallback position, though, in case Senator Barack Obama is the nominee. They've probably got a group together, something like National Independent Group Gathering Equality Racially. God, this makes me sick. I hate that. I hate the bickering that we see on our own side because we expect so much more of our own candidates. I loathe it. I detest it. I despise it. And then to realize that this is what we're going to have to deal with for the next 10 months. Citizens United, Not Timid. And a graphic representation of a woman's genitals in line art. You know, there was a time in this country when a Bill Clinton, say, could walk up to Dick Stone, knock the snot out of him, and tell him he'd meet him on the field at Weehawken the following morning and blow his stinking head off. A lot of people, oh, Bill Clinton's being nasty, Bill Clinton's being mean. Well, you know what, if it came to Roger Dick Stone and Citizens United, Not Timid, what Hillary Clinton really is, I wouldn't care if Bill Clinton walked up to him and hit him in the head with a sledgehammer. Andrew Jackson, once upon a time, of his political opponents, the sleazemongers who had fought him, the central bank people in large part, said, I can forgive them for what they have done to me and what they have done to this republic, but I cannot and I will not ever forgive them for what they did to my beloved Rachel. Gentlemen, married men, sorry, this is. I hope this isn't deemed misogynistic or sexist, but I'm a guy, and I have to speak from a guy's perspective, and I have to speak to guys in this instance. Gentlemen, what would you do? What would you do if there was somebody walking around your town with a website selling T-shirts of an organization called Citizens United, Not Timid? What, and fill in the name of your wife's here, what she really is. What would you do? How would you respond? Would you say, well, we deplore the formation of this group in the strongest possible terms. What a pity it is to see the political discourse in this country lowered to such a base level. It's such a shame. I really think that Mr. Stone and I should sit down and sing Kumbaya together. What would you do? Is that what you'd do? Or would you find the bastard and rip his head off and down his neck? But this is what passes for politics in the Repig-Lickin Party. This is the party where Lee Atwater gave us Willie Horton and then begged forgiveness as his brain rotted out inside his very skull. This is the party of Karl Rove. This is the party of Tom DeLay and Jack Abramoff and Ralph Reed, and James Dobson, all these filthy, vile sleazemongers. I don't know, though. This is going to have to, for the time being, this is going to have to stand as the single most disgusting, sleazy piece of politics that I have seen in my lifetime. It's over at TPM Muckraker if you want to read a little bit more. The link is at Bart Kopp, and the link is also at MakeThemAccountable.com. Decide for yourself. To the phones. Ah, darn it. So, you know, there you have it. You can Google Roger Stone and you'll see the salacious articles about his conduct. And, by the way, I had this sitting around for a while, and I didn't really do anything with it because I wanted to have a little bit of time to do it justice. Go out for pizza much? Domino's? Papa John's? Pizza Hut? When we can, we've got a little local pizza joint that we try to go to. Not a chain. People working hard to make good food, and we know that they're putting good food on their pizza. Not so at Pizza Hut. Headline: silicone-based chemical in Pizza Hut's cheese. From a publication called The Milkweed, Dairy's Best Marketing Info and Insight is what they say they are. Last month, The Milkweed detailed how Pizza Hut restaurants illegally claimed to use mozzarella cheese on certain menu items when, in fact, Pizza Hut's salt, starch, and water-laden pizza cheese does not conform to FDA standards of identity for mozzarella. In this issue, writer John Bunting details how Pizza Hut's cheese supplier, Leprino Foods, uses a uses a silicone-based industrial chemical in the patented manufacturing of pizza cheese. That chemical, polymethyl siloxane, That chemical, polymethyl siloxane, has no FDA approval for use as a food ingredient. Polymethyl siloxane is sold by Dow Corning as Anti-Foam FG10. This material is approved by FDA for use in food plants only as an anti-foaming agent for boiler water. In its patented manufacturing process, Leprino Foods liberally sprays polydimethyl siloxane on cheese granules. Leprino's pizza cheese supplied to Pizza Huts contains about 900 parts per million of polymethyl siloxane. Now, wait a minute. On the one hand, it says polydimethyl siloxane, and then there's polymethyl siloxane. Okay. Polydimethyl siloxane that's sprayed on pizza cheese supplied to Pizza Huts contains about 900 parts per million of polymethyl siloxane, 90 times higher residue concentrations than the FDA allows when polymethyl siloxane is used as a boiler water anti-foaming agent. Welcome to America. Silicone lips, silicone boobs, silicone butts, silicone caulking in the bathroom, silicone hand cream, and now, brought to you by Pizza Hut, silicone pizza cheese. Hey, Grandpa, what's for supper? Why would they do this? Well, Leprino Foods, the world's largest Italian cheese manufacturer, is nearly is the nearly exclusive supplier of pizza cheeses to the 6,000 Pizza Hut restaurants in the U.S. Leprino is based in Denver, Colorado. To control costs and boost profits, I think Gene sent me this story. I've been fascinated with it for a week. I keep reading it, trying to find it. But no, there's no saving grace in this. To control costs and boost profits, oh, there it is again. Leprino Foods uses patented manufacturing processes that add large volumes of water, salt, and food starch to so-called granules of pizza cheese prior to flash freezing. Food starch is a particularly profitable addition to processed foods since food starch holds 10 times its own weight in water. You know, the American capitalist marketplace really is nothing but one great big carnival midway, is it? All that food starch, water, and salt in the Leprino's pizza cheese creates problems for both cooking and refrigerated shelf life. I am never, ever, ever again buying another bag of pre-shredded mozzarella cheese, because there's no way of knowing, even if it says Kraft or Borden, there's no way of knowing that in the end it wasn't subcontracted out to Leprino, who has kindly sprayed it with starch and polymethyl siloxane. Anyway, food starch holds lots and lots of water, and the water and the salt in the pizza cheese creates problems for both cooking and refrigerated shelf life. So to solve the problems, Leprino's patented process for making cheese granules sprays 1.75 parts of a water-based spray containing 0.05% Dow Corning Anti-Foam FG10 polydimethyl siloxane for each 100 parts of cheese. 900 parts per million is the yield. Usable only, I repeat, only as an anti-foaming agent for boiler water in plants processing non-standardized foods. So, how did they find it? I mean, because the label doesn't say including polymethyl siloxane. Start with an empty box of pizza cheese liberated from a dumpster behind a Pizza Hut. The contents were Pizza Hut's pizza cheese, weight when full, 15 pounds. The box contains a statement noting their products is packaged exclusively for use by Pizza Hut, its franchises, and licensees. The USDA plant number leads back to Leprino Foods. The box also notes a patent number and other patents pending. So you trace the patent, and you find coated cheese granules. And then the patent abstract says, coated frozen cheese granules are prepared by freezing the granules and applying an aqueous coating containing one or more modifying additives. On baking the cheese, the additives in the frozen coatings distribute throughout the cheese to obtain modification of flavor and other properties. The aqueous coating, which is also patented, is contained in the cheese of the finished cooked pizza. Oh my God. Honey, let's go get us a silicone pizza. I've been hankering for some silicone. After all, you won't go and get the silicone elsewhere. Least you can do is let me have it on my pizza. Oh. Well, no more Pizza Hut. But, you know, we weren't doing Pizza Hut in the first place. You know, Agnes hates these stories. Hey, honey, come look what's on the pizza cheese at Pizza Hut. Oh, shut up, Bob! No, really. Polymethyl siloxane. Silicone pizza. Really? Really? Well, our granddaughter will never eat any Pizza Hut. But, you know, this I find this stuff out because, you know, we've got the world's best news ninjas. And I try to pass it along and share it with you. Meanwhile, sorry, they didn't have time for it on the Today Show. And, you know, they had to cut the polymethyl siloxane on the Pizza Hut pizza cheese mozzarella product food spread story from Good Morning America because Robin Roberts needed to talk to Glenn Beck, who needed to talk about how the fact that he went to a private for-profit hospital that ruined his butt was somehow the government's fault. Boom! Now, I mean, I'm making that up. But that's how it works. Yeah, we've reached a time in America where Ringo Starr has more integrity than almost any American politician or any American policymaker or any American newsmaker or any American star or celebrity. Ringo Starr walked off the set of Regis and Kathy Lee the other morning because they asked him to cut his 4-minute song down to 2 minutes and 15 seconds because nobody gets to play for more than 2 minutes and 15 seconds on Regis and Kathy Lee. To which the 67-year-old Ringo Starr replied, "All right, then, I guess I'm leaving." And he got in his little yellow submarine and he drove away. Because he was not going to compromise his art. Say what you will of Ringo Starr. And there's plenty to be said. Good, bad, and otherwise. Say what you will. But he would not compromise the stuff that he makes his living out of, the very thing that constitutes a big part of his sense of self, was not open to compromise for the sake of filling a 2-minute and 15-second slot on Regis and Kathy Lee by butchering a 4-minute song. You know what? I read that and I was proud. I was proud of Ringo Starr. Kind of goes into the annals of rock and roll history with, I don't know, Jim Morrison saying "higher" directly into the camera on the Ed Sullivan Show. Or Elvis Costello having a hissy on Saturday Night Live. Or Sinead O'Connor having a hissy on Saturday Night Live. Not artists being prima donnas, but artists being true to the art that moves and provides them their raison d'être. One of these days, you guys are going to take me on for my poor French pronunciation. So stay away. Stay away from the Pizza Hut. And just one more moment of absolute jerkness. Just to finish things off. Yeah, you know, there's a bunch of issues, and maybe I didn't get to the ones you wanted me to get to. Well, you know, you're partly responsible for that because, you know, you didn't pick up the phone and call and say, "This is what I want to talk about." Last week, it was John Gibson giving kudos to white America for making more little white babies. Well, it's Heath Ledger now. Yeah. You know, because Heath Ledger passed away. And Heath Ledger was, of course, in Brokeback Mountain. Therefore, you know, they'll try to make something out of it that it isn't. John Gibson. Oh, God. John Gibson broke all homophobic. And it was indeed disgusting. covering Ledger's death on his radio show, he played the I Can't Quit You clip from Brokeback Mountain, which was a fine movie, touching film. But, you know, that's the signature line, I can't quit you. And then John Gibson said, well, he found out how to quit ya. And went on to suggest that Heath Ledger was a drug addict. And said that he was overdosed because he was all depressed from watching the Clinton-Obama debate. And, you know, while the ESPN morning Blabfest show host was suspended for a week for saying F Jesus, John Gibson will not miss a minute, a meal, or any of the $1 million plus that he earns per year for making fun of people who pass away and inferring that they died because of sexuality that he deems to be aberrant. Classy, huh? And people will continue, American corporations will, of course, continue to advertise on John Gibson's show. Just kind of makes you all tingly, doesn't it? I mean, these are some nice people out there. Classy bunch, the right wing. The Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation. I used to could talk, you know. A Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation has started a petition asking Fox News why, quote, they continue to provide a platform for John Gibson's cruel and tasteless comments. And just for the fun of it, you might find this interesting. You want to, you know, he's on Fox News, John Gibson. Let's see. Who advertises with Fox News? Got a minute? Adobe Systems Incorporated, American Express, AstraZeneca, Avaya, AmeriQuest Mortgage, AT&T, BMW, Bayer, Black & Decker, Boeing, Bristol-Myers, Burlington Coat Factory, CDW, Celebrity Cruises, CheapTickets.com, Singular, Circuit City, Dannon, DirecTV, Ditech.com, Dodge, Earthlink, Edward Jones Investments, Eloan.com, Enova, Fidelity Investments, Hula Networks, Hyatt Gold, Infinity, Jeep, LendingTree, Lexus, Lincoln Mercury, Mercedes-Benz, Morgan Stanley, Napster, Northwestern Mutual, Office Depot, Progressive Insurance, Splenda, Target, Travelocity, and, of course, Walmart. Every one of those companies has tacitly, explicitly approved of the filth that John Gibson punches out onto the airwaves and calls journalism. Nice. And you wonder why this country is in the wreck that it's in. Couple of emails just before we wrap up. If I had universal health care, I would immediately be free to spend over $1,000 a month elsewhere. First, I could pay off my debts. Then I would have an additional $500 a month to spend elsewhere. This would just be my premium savings, not pharmacy or travel or prosthetics. I am typical of most Americans. Don't you think that kind of loosening up of our budgets would stimulate the economy? Why, yes. Yes, I do. And, yeah, that's what it's, Citizens United, Not Timid, that's what it spells. Anyone wearing a T-shirt from this organization, another email, had better be careful of the women of this country. I see one, and the man wearing it will be called a prick in a loud, carrying voice, and then I'll do my best to draw a crowd as I explain exactly why I said said person is. Nice people, these Republicans. Not. Nobody I'd want to share a country with. How about you? That's why they've got to be excluded from the discussion. They are part of the problem and not a part of the solution. So thanks, everybody, for your emails, for your calls. If I didn't get to you, I'm sorry. I took off and just rambled for a minute. I apologize. Thank you to those of you who responded to Rick Goodner's promise by sending a contribution in during the program, or if you're listening later, by doing so whenever it was you heard it. Thank you. On behalf of everybody here at the Horn who wants to continue doing what we're doing, thank you. And make what we're doing better. Thank you. Thanks to the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. People inside and outside of West Virginia working to end the war on Appalachia. CRMW.net. Be part of the solution. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
Kids, it's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the Dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 108 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, exclusively on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Thursday, January the 24th, 2008. So if you're listening shortly after 9 p.m. on Thursday, January the 24th, 2008, you are indeed listening to a live show, and you're welcome to participate. I'll be giving out the toll-free numbers and the toll numbers shortly. If you're not listening shortly after 9 p.m., you're listening to one of the archive streams, and we appreciate your listening in any way. We are glad to have you participate in the show, and email us later or email us during the show, or call in any way you'd like to participate. This is Conversation Radio. Bob is completely correct that many people do listen to these shows as a podcast or a stream. In fact, probably the majority of the listeners to this network do listen at their own schedule at some point other than the time that it is actually airing. Of course, being listed over at White Rose Society is a huge advantage. White Rose Society, of course, carries our streams and is known to be the holy grail aggressive talk radio on the internet. You can find millions of hours there. Maybe you might like to drop White Rose a email to webmaster@whiterosesociety.org, and we can get Strictly Confidential there too. You will find the name there, but actually there are no working links all the way back to August, July, something like that. But anyway, it would be great to have this show available as an archive there too. That's a wonderful advantage to be included amongst the wonderful progressive programming over at White Rose Society. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you're going to find links to all of the guests as well as to the audio archives from past shows. You'll find links to our chat room, which is active as we speak. You'll find links to the main Head On Radio Network site, where you can find out about all the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network. There are links there for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page, and links to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. As I said, the toll-free line is 877, the number 4, Head On. That translates into 877-443-2366. That's 877-443-2366. If you have unlimited long distance, please use that. You'll save listener-supported radio a nickel or a buck. That's area code 304-658-3333. That's 304-658-3333, and that rings in West Virginia. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com, and I do try to check the mail during the breaks. We do have a guest this evening. The guest will be joining us at 9:30, and I'm thrilled to have this man with us this evening. It is Alexander Robinson, and he is the executive director of the National Black